Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, on this fine Sunday morning, July 007th, 2019. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Hope you enjoyed your brunch. We're here for a very special panel called Four Faces,
Four Decades,
007.
Very well played. So essentially, obviously, we're very big James Bond fans. We hope you are James Bond fans as well. Long-standing franchise, very successful, 50-plus years. Everybody loves it. Everything's great. It's perfect. Well, funnily enough, throughout the franchise, there are several movies that have maybe be hit, not snags, but controversies. Funnily enough, there are four films celebrating anniversaries this year in 2019. Next slide, please. So we have, in 1969, Honor Majesty's Secret Service was released. Has anybody seen that movie? Oh, yeah. Oh, we're pretty good, actually. Wonderful. 1979, a very, very special movie, Moonraker. How about that one? Wow, we have a pretty good crowd here. 1989, ooh, License to Kill.
You guys are cheating.
Yeah, this is... And finally, 20 years ago, 1999's The World Is Not Enough. Oh, actually, okay, wonderful, wonderful, excellent, excellent. We're with the good people here this morning. So essentially, each one of these films is notorious for one reason or another. And what we're going to do, through chronological order of their release, we're going to discuss the controversies and maybe spin them back way around to into a positivity, essentially. So we're going to start with On Her Majesty's Secret Service. By the way, we didn't even introduce ourselves. Why don't we do that? I'm Edgar, one of the co-hosts of the James Bond Complex.
I'm Matt. I'm the other co-host of the James Bond Complex.
What's up, guys? Jeff Weibo, James Bond Canada, and I'm from Ontario. Sorry.
We forgive you. We still like you. So, Jeff, I know you're a pretty big Majesty's fan. I do like it, although it's funny. That one's usually... criticized because it's the only movie starring the other fellow. What's his name again?
George Lazenby, the Australian. So, yes, today, guys, it's all about the controversies a bit. And George's controversy is he was not an actor and he became James Bond. And you got to go back to 1962, and we all know Sean Connery was the first official James Bond in Dr. No. Well, while Sean Connery was playing James Bond in this movie, George Lazenby was in Australia, and he was taking a girl to the movie called Dr. No, and he thought he had a good chance going in, and going out, he had a horrible chance with this girl, because James Bond was getting all the girls in this movie and saving the world, and George Lazenby wanted to be James Bond. But then you got to fast forward a bit, 1967, You Only Live Twice is wrapping up, and Connery, through a bunch of stuff with the producers, decides to back out of the James Bond role. So then the producers go on this worldwide manhunt for the next James Bond. The producers thought Sean Connery isn't necessarily James Bond. James Bond is bigger than any actor, so they go looking for the next Bond. And so there's a guy, there's a girl named Maggie Abbott, and she's friends of George Lazenby, and she says, George, there's a perfect movie you got to go audition for. So George goes down, and they throw him out right away, because he was just a male model, and he gets on the phone with Maggie Abbott and says, they wouldn't even let me audition. And she's like, no, George, you have to go and, like, get into the audition. He's like, oh, okay. So what does he do? And he's not an actor. He's just one of us. He's like any one of you guys out here. So he goes and he gets Sean Connery's suit, a spare suit from Anthony Sinclair, and he puts it on. And then he goes to Sean Connery's barber, and he gets Sean Connery's haircut, and he gets Sean Connery's a version of a Rolex. And he goes down, and there's the casting department. If you guys can picture a bunch of little James Bonds sitting there trying to audition for the role of James Bond, they're all probably dressed like Sean Connery and stuff, but not as well as George. And he sees, like, a girl, like, drop a pencil, like the little secretary, and he sneaks past her, and he shows up, and there's, like, an executive producer who's on the phone, and he sits there. He leans up against the office, and he says, I hear you're looking for the next James Bond. And now, maybe out of panic, because this executive producer couldn't find a Bond, he was talking to Harry Saltzman, who was the James Bond producer, on the phone at the time, and maybe he's like, I think I got somebody for you. So George, they said, like, where have you filmed before? And he started naming all these places that they would never be able to check because they didn't have, like, Google back then, obviously. And so he started saying, like, oh, Hong Kong, this place. And they're like, oh, wow, this sounds good. And so he's, like, lying or spying his way into this role. And they make George do horseback riding, swimming lessons, fight scenes. They even, because he was a male model back in the 60s, they even sent a female over to his hotel room to see what he would do. So that's what went on back in show business at the time. Obviously, the times have changed today. But, well, maybe. But eventually, George, like almost like the gig was up, he just kept, you know, redoubling down on this lie. And he pulled the director aside, Peter Hunt, and he said, Peter, I'm not an actor. And Peter's like, starts belly laughing, and he says, and then George is like, what? And he's like, you just fooled two of the most ruthless producers in all of show business. He's like, stick to your story, kid, and I'll make you the next James Bond. And that's how George Lazenby, you guys can like literally take that into your lives. He was just told no, 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 and he just decided to not listen to a no and worked his way right into James Bond. So pretty fascinating story. So next time you're watching the film, he's criticized for not being an actor, but remember that he wasn't an actor and he became James Bond. There's more people on the moon that have gone to the moon than have played James Bond, and he's one of them. And recently, I just got back from 2 weeks in Portugal all the way to Switzerland on the 50th anniversary tour of On Her Majesty's Secret Service and with George Lazenby. So I've hung out with George and he's still the womanizer person from the 60s in 2019 right now. He's stuck in the 60s, so he's quite the character, and love him or hate him, he played James Bond, and next time you're watching the film, just remember that, guys. What do you guys think of it, Majesties?
Matt?
You know what? I think time has helped this movie. I think at the time, the controversy of the casting, even sort of the attitude he had towards the role, sort of made it so that people had a predetermined idea of how he performed in the movie. I think he's actually great in the movie. He's playing a fresh-faced version of the character. And for modern audiences, I don't think it's as important as it was at the time that, oh, it's not Sean Connery. People don't care. It's just a movie. It's James Bond. They don't care. There's been like four other guys that have played the part. And I think it helps because he's so innocent in the movie compared to Sean Connery's more stoic, especially near the end of his tenure in the role. I think it makes the character more believable. He's closer to Fleming. He's probably the second closest actor to portray the character that's as close to Fleming, and I think it helps. Edgar.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a wonderful film. It's a wonderful picture. Much like Jeff said, you know, give this movie a chance. There's really a lot of quality about it. And specifically, George Lazenby, further to your point, his youthfulness does inject a certain vulnerability to the role, which is maybe, notwithstanding Daniel Craig, is something you might not expect from your James Bond film. So it does have a very, very special quality about it. I like it too.
Yeah, not easy shoes being 29 years old and taking over from Sean Connery after the 60s, you know, James Bond bonanza.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Big shoes to fill in more ways than one.
Now, all of this talking about traveling to his glory and the skiing, I want to go somewhere else. I want to visit somewhere that no man has gone before. Let's go to space.
You want to go to space?
Let's go to space.
All right, it'll be my pleasure to take this crowd around the world one more time. We're going to 1979 and Moonraker. Now, what's the fuss about Moonraker when this one is brought up? Well, it's the one where they send James Bond to space. It doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous. How can you take that movie seriously? You're not really supposed to take Moonraker maybe too seriously, but that's another discussion. That's for next year's panel. Essentially, yeah, it's true. The last, let's say, 20, 25 minutes takes place in outer space. I would bring up three critical points to defend that section. Number one, it's 1979. A couple years earlier, a moderate box office hit, Star Wars. Has anybody heard? You're Star Wars characters, right? No, I'm joking. So essentially, moderate box office hit. May have been a few people cosplaying as Star Wars characters here this since Friday. And look, the Bond producers, they're not blind. Like any other producers, what comes out after Star Wars? Alien, Star Trek, the motion picture. Black Hole, I believe, is one of them that really piggybacked off of the success of Star Wars. The James Bond producer said, look, the next movie, we thought it was going to be a slightly more grounded one. Scratch that. Change everything. We're going to outer space. So, and to their credit, I was looking at the numbers, and you know, you do have to adjust it to inflation. I'm no mathematician. You can just Google the currency inflator. This thing made close to $750 million in 2019.
That's a lot of coconuts.
Like, the people enjoyed this one. They ate it up. And lastly, so we got the fact that, you know, they're riding a wave. They made a gamble. It paid off in spades and then some. And with respect to the sequence itself, there are a fair number of people in the room that have seen Moonraker. I mean, let's be frank, as wonderful as the special effects in Star Wars, and they are, as wonderful as the special effects in the motion picture, and they're fantastic. Man, the stuff they're doing in Moonraker is kind of insane. Just the way that the model work, the miniature work by a fellow named Derek Meddings, and the painstaking process to bring that sequence to life. They would use the same film strip, add a little astronaut or add a little beam or a shuttle. Then they'd have to rewind it, add something else, obviously being very careful that those images would not crisscross to make it look completely ridiculous. Otherwise, the whole effort was for naught. So very laborious, very painstaking. But if you watch the movie, especially those final 20 minutes, the money's on the screen, guys. The money is on the screen. So I think it's a very fun sequence. It's a very impressive sequence technically. So at the end of the day, it's a positive for Moonraker. What do you guys think, Jeff?
Yeah, business-wise, I think it's very fascinating because at the end of The Spy Who Loved Me, it says James Bond will return in For Your Eyes Only. But then obviously Star Wars takes off in 77 and they change that. There's no internet, so they just like, whatever, we'll put out Moonraker. But like, I'm a big YouTube fan, and you know, when there's a viral video, you kind of like copy off of that somewhat. So it's like pretty interesting to see the Bond producers are, okay, riding the waves. But definitely, like, it's an interesting movie. Obviously, everybody knows it for outer space, but it's really only the end chapter of the movie that he goes to outer space. It's quite the spy movie before that, and there's a few interesting like very dangerous type scenes where the Dobermans are killing Corinne Defer outside of Vaux-de-Vacamp in France there, which was Hugo Drax's chateau. And like, it's kind of like really ruthless. They try to kill Bond in a centrifuge and poor Roger Moore is getting whipped around in this thing. And there's some of the creepy scenes with Jaws walking through an alley in Rio where it's just like really kind of weird. But then there's all these like fun, like little back to Roger Moore's antics going on in this
good
movie
stuff.
So it kind of like weirdly mixes that into it. What do you think, Matthew?
I think this movie has one of the best villains in the entire franchise. Mm-hmm. I love Michael Lonsdale as Hugo Drax. I can't do him justice, but please, Edgar, can you do a line just for me?
Now we're in trouble. James Bond, you return with the tedious inevitability of an unloved season. Beautiful dialogue, and he's great in it.
He's great. It's deadpan humor. It's awesome. I love him. And this movie has probably to this day the best opening sequence stunt. The fall from the plane without a parachute. To me, it's
yeah. Tom Cruise, eat your heart out, right?
Yeah. Honestly,
yeah, that's right.
It is okay. It's probably not Roger Moore that did the stunts. But still, it's a captivating sequence with the music, the John Barry music. Who's back after missing The Spy Who Loved Me? It's really, like, just for that sequence, you can't put this movie in the worst pile. It belongs somewhere else. I don't know where, but it's great action sequence.
Yeah, I mean, Moonraker is a lot of fun. Space, lasers, skydiving, Jaws goes from being a baddie to a goodie. However, when it comes to the James Bond movies, it's not always fun and games. In fact, we get down and dirty sometimes in the James Bond movies, which will bring us to 1989's License to Kill. Now, Matt, I know this is your movie, but like, you can't bring your kids to it. It's so violent. What's going on in License to Kill? Explain.
Dalton is dangerous. This movie, has had another name before it came out. It was supposed to be named License Revoked, but they changed it because apparently us North Americans would think it's a comedy, probably a sequel to License to Drive. That came out the summer before, even the same summer.
I was very disappointed when that sequel never came.
Yeah. So they changed the title. That's one of the controversy. Also, it is more violent than the previous Bond movies. It's a little bit rougher, but to its credit, a lot of the sequences that are considered more violent happen in other films, other previous Bond films. Somebody got fed to a shark in a Thunderball. Phoenix Leiter gets fed to a shark in this movie. Somebody gets turned into a balloon and explodes. That also happens. Well, it's a little bit more bloody and violent. But, you know, it's a Bond movie. It's a movie about a spy. There's going to be violence and murder. But that's part of the reason why it has a bad reputation. Also, its box office numbers are horrendous, miserable. And that movie is probably the lowest grossing Bond movie even to this day. But it was the summer of 1989. If you were around in 1989, and if you weren't, I'll teach you something. That's the summer of Batman, of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, Ghostbusters 2. But Ghostbusters 2 and Star Trek 5, both of these movies, which are big franchises that are still going into this, all of them underperform. And License to Kill was a victim of the box office competition. But to its credit, it has great action sequence. The oil tanker chase at the end is great, where the trucks do wheelies. I love that sequence.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It has also Dalton, who's a lot tougher in the role, a little bit more grim and gritty, and he's the last Bond to ever smoke on screen. I always love to say that because to me it feels cigarettes. Yeah. Like
we're not condoning cigarettes.
No, but it feels right for the character. And he's closer to Fleming. And there's a lot of Fleming material in this movie that they recycle from a few of the short stories. And it has one of my favorite villains, Fran Sanchez, played by Robert Davi. He's great. He's not your typical world-conquering, maniacal supervillain. He's not a Captain Industry looking for to create a monopoly of gold or microchips. He's just a guy, a businessman, basically. Just his business is a little bit criminal. He just wants to sell his drugs. He wants to sell cocaine. So also has probably the first time, and I don't think they've ever done that in the entire franchise, Bond chooses a girl. Usually one of them ends up being either a villain or dying halfway through the movie. In this movie, at the end of the movie, he has the ravenous femme fatale in the presence of Lupe, and he has the tougher Bond chick that he ends up leaping for at the end of the movie. So that's one of the first times. And also this movie has an Academy Award henchman played by Benicio Del Toro, plays Dario. He's so amazing. Just his delivery of the we're gonna give her a nice honeymoon. It's just weird. It's funny. So what do you guys think about License to Kill? Do you think it's as controversial as people say?
If you compare it to other entries in the franchise, I'm almost forced to say yes. But in a funny way, that's what makes it so special. That's why it's such an important and a beautiful entry in the franchise as well, because it's so different. Like, yeah, there are gadgets, but there's also somebody who gets sent into a little air compressor and so that doesn't happen in any of the other movies. There is that bit of a slightly more violent streak. What I always find fascinating whenever I watch the movie is that I find it's very much tailored to Timothy Dalton, the actor himself, a very Shakespearean-trained actor, very emotional. He likes character, he likes grit, and that's clearly reflected on the screen. So I think it's a great movie. There are tons of qualities about it, but I think Timothy Dalton's presence and his performance is always what strikes me the most when I watch that one. Jeff?
Yeah, it's a badass movie. It's a good one to like blare the Michael Kamen soundtrack to on a Friday night or something like that. Now, Jean, who's on stage here, and I just had dinner on top of Pete's Gloria with the director, John Glenn. And John Glenn did 5 Bond directing movies for Bond in the 80s. And this is his favorite movie. So, and you guys were kind of like talking about a bit very Ian Fleming. This script was written for Dalton, where The Living Daylights was a little tailored a little bit for Roger Moore, and they had to like quickly switch it over to Dalton. This was totally Dalton by Richard Maybaum and Michael G. Wilson writing it for him. So badass movie. And I believe it was the times, guys, the 80s action movies like Terminator, like Rambo, like Scarface, Predator. All these things were violent.
Lethal Weapon.
You don't even see good rated R movies anymore. This was like, it was almost rated R.
It's the first PG-13 Bond.
Yeah. So.
It's quite notorious for that also. But all this talk about
James Bond?
Past James Bond movies, you know, there's another one we haven't talking about. What's the one, Jeff? What's the one we were supposed to talk about?
Le Monde ne suffit pas.
Wonderful. That's why we brought him here. He earned it. So we're in 1999 now. The world is not enough. Again, I think when this one's brought up, it's not because of Pierce Brosnan. It's not because of Sophie Marceau. It's not the plot. It's not the action necessarily. Let's be frank here. It's the wonderful, supremely talented Denise Richards. Now, hold on, guys. Sure, is she the best actress in the world? Perhaps not. However, a few points. I'm gonna go to bat for her. Number one, the nature of the role she's given. You know, she's not a Pam Bouvier like in License to Kill. She's not a Teresa Di Vicenzo like in On a Magic Secret Service. She's not a Holly Goodhead like in Moonraker. She's a nuclear physicist. That's what she does. She's good at her job. She's not a spy. She doesn't kill people. She doesn't do espionage. So she's one of those characters that's thrust into this whirlwind adventure with James Bond. So I think when you're given a role like that, you're kind of limited to looking a little bit dumbfounded, a little bit scared, and you sort of charge ahead and you do what you can to help James Bond. I think she equips herself reasonably well to that effect. As for the character, I actually think Dr. Christmas Jones is quite interesting. She, to me, embodies yet another example of a very interesting, intelligent, leading lady, of which there are so many in the franchise. And I find one of the easy criticisms to lambast the series is, oh, well, the leading ladies, they're just prizes that Bond earns at the end of the film. And I'm not going to say there are no films where that happens, and it's a fair enough criticism. Dr. Christmas Jones, however, people easily mock the fact that, oh, she's so good-looking, it's Denise Richards, that doesn't make sense. If Bond doesn't have Dr. Jones by his side in the pipeline sequence when they're defusing a bomb, at the time they believe it's going to go nuclear, turns out it won't. At the end of the movie in the nuclear-powered submarine, James Bond needs the information from Christmas Jones to better understand what's going on. So she's central to the plot. If she's not there, this might be a movie where James Bond doesn't come out on top. And going back to what I was saying maybe with Moonraker a little bit, you know, the producers piggybacking on a sort of success, the 90s and the early aughts were a little bit interesting when it came to the casting of the movies. Denise Richards and this film is sandwiched between two other movies, The Tomorrow Never Dies, 1997, and Die Another Day, 2002. And you sort of have a funny little trilogy of movies there, all starring Pierce Brosnan, funnily enough, where either the leading lady or a strong supporting role is played by a really like popular hot actor, American actress at the time. You have Terry Hatcher, who was popular for a Superman show. The name of the title escapes. Lois and Clark, I think it was Lois and Clark. She was very popular for that, so she gets a job in Tomorrow Never Dies. Denise Richards was coming off
Starship Troopers, Wild Things.
Yeah, Wild Things. That's unforgettable. And you have Halle Berry, who actually had just won an Oscar as she was filming Die Another Day. So, you know, again, it's another example of the producers saying, well, let's go with what's popular. Let's make it easy on ourselves. And again, these movies make money, so you can't really blame them. Those are my thoughts on Denise Richards, Dr. Christmas Jones, and World Is Not Enough. How about you guys, Matt?
I've always had heard complaints about her character, but remember the bunk, for those who've seen the movie, if you haven't, at one point Bond gets trapped in an underground bunker, the villain blows, starts an explosion, and Bond is forced to try and escape. And if it's not for the character of Christmas Jones, who's jumping around plugging things into like machinery to get the doors to open, Bond would again fry. And that's pretty much what they hired her for. They hired her because she was fit, she was athletic, and like you've seen the picture, I mean, she looks good. She is appealing. And honestly, the plot of the movie, we haven't talked about the movie itself. This is GoldenEye and The World's Enough are probably my two favorite Brosnan personally, and sometimes I'm going to lean more on GoldenEye, and sometimes I lean more to The World is Enough. I think The World is Enough, I think it has the probably the more realistic plot of the Brosnan era. It feels like it's almost on the verge of being possible. It's the plot of trying to basically blow up the pipeline so that her pipeline becomes, it's a little bit of a Goldfinger plot, and it has one of the best villains of the Brosnan era, probably second to Sean Bean. Sometimes I could probably flip it to her. Sophie Masso is great in the movie. She plays, she's like a female Blofeld in a way. Like, I think awesome. the setting line for the script idea is that Bond thinks he's found his new love, his new Tracy, and it ends up becoming a new Blofeld, which I think is a great way of selling this movie. How about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Denise Richards, her enthusiasm about playing the role, because she'd be on the red carpet in Los Angeles at the premiere and be like, I get to kiss James Bond. And like some of the actors and actresses just turn away from this series, but she was pretty pumped to be in The World's Enough at the time. But unfortunately, she ended up winning a Razzie Award for the film, so not the best day there for her.
You know, she's not a Razzie in our hearts, though. There we have it. So we've run the gamut of the four films that are celebrating an anniversary this year. People, you know, we love them. We hope the audience here loves them, obviously. We're big fans, so it's very easy for us to counterpoint, you know, the criticism against these films. But it's funny, they're all very unique in their own particular way. Majesty's, Moonraker, License to Kill, and The World is Not Enough. They all have their particularities. Not only are they great pictures, but I think they also beautifully demonstrate how each of the films, or most of the movies are actually quite unique. There's a back, you know, a counterpoint to another criticism. Oh, they're all James Bond movies are the same. Not really.
No.
No, they're not the same at all, actually. And so while there are certain circles and certain people that look at these four movies, for instance, and besmirch their reputations, we hope, you know, through our presentation, you know, we've sung their praises, and we hope you actually agree with us as well. And thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed the show, and the floor is now open to questions. Thank you so much.
Vous pouvez poser vos questions en français aussi.
Oui, définitivement.
Si vous avez des questions français-anglais,
just say le monde ne suffit pas.
Le monde ne suffit pas.
My English is not so good, so très bonne présentation. Je considère merci. Tous les films, en fait, les trois premiers sont excellents. The World's Not Enough, peut-être un peu moins. Ma question est la suivante, c'est sur au service secret de Sa Majesté. Est-ce que vous savez pourquoi c'est probablement le film de James Bond qui suit le plus à la lettre les romans de Fleming, parce qu'il est vraiment plus dark. J'ai lu les romans de Fleming, c'est vraiment le seul qui colle à un roman de Fleming. Et il est excellent pour cette raison-là. Donc,
Peter, hein? Mathieu, veux-tu prendre la question?
I feel like Jean wants to take this one. Jean from James Bond Club France.
Non, c'est ça. Moi, je pense que c'est Peter Hunt, le directeur. Il voulait vraiment quelque chose back to Earth, to Fleming. Sur les romans de Fleming, il voulait vraiment. Puis je crois sincèrement que ça, c'est le meilleur roman d'Ian Fleming aussi.
C'est le dernier?
C'est vraiment le meilleur. Donc, c'est plus ça qui a fait que la décision s'est prise. Puis ils ont l'emmené vraiment à cette. Puis ils ont choisi quelqu'un qui n'était pas acteur. Puis je pense qu'il a fait un très bon job. Dans le film.
La dernière scène du film, il est vraiment bon. Quand sa femme meurt, là, il joue vraiment bien, le zombie, sur cette scène-là, du moins.
Merci.
Puis je pense qu'il y a peut-être une certaine reconnaissance que, parce que le film qui précède celui-ci, On ne vit que deux fois, il est vraiment cool, il est vraiment drôle, très sympathique, mais c'est un peu flyé, disons. C'est ça, donc je pense qu'il voulait revenir ça à la...
It's the 60s, they're taking drugs.
And if I think I got it all, but if I can add, we know before You Only Live Twice, Bond meets Blofeld, right? And then 2 years later, he meets Blofeld, and Blofeld has no idea who he is, right? But Peter Hunt just told the producers, like, it's your fault. You messed up the order, and I'm filming Majesties the way the book is. So that's interesting.
Puis l'autre chose, si vous avez remarqué, il n'y avait presque pas de gadget non plus.
Exact. Comme la
flamme. Except le... Comment ça s'appelle ça, là, pour le...
Ah oui, pour trouver les documents dans
ouais,
vos...
That's it.
Yeah. All right. Anyone wants to chime in? English, French?
Spanish, I can maybe fake some Spanish.
Could be Bond 25 questions too. It doesn't have to be about this at all.
He asked why do you think they decided to make this book as close to Fleming as in comparison to the previous film?
Our answer was, because it's badass. La question classique.
It's for the video too, if you put it in.
Quel est votre film préféré chacun?
What's your favorite movie? We talked about that yesterday.
Casino Royale 1967.
Oh, you beat me to it. Shoot.
Just personally, it's really hard to pick one because, like, you can see it's really hard. It's not a, like a steady series. It's so different. It's like, what do you like, a European country versus a Central American country? It's pretty hard to like pick something like that. So like, you can't say that Spectre's the best and Dr. No is the worst or whatever. Like, they're so different. But per Bond actor, let's go with Thunderball. Majesties gets the freebie there, and then Spy Love Me, Living Daylights, and The World's Not Enough because it was the first one I ever saw in the theater.
Jean?
Pour moi, je dirais Goldfinger, On a Majesty, puis The Spy Love Me.
Mathieu?
I can do top three. I would probably Casino Royale, not the 67 version.
The 54?
Oh.
Not the 54 version.
T'es certain?
Pretty sure. Yeah. I would probably put second Goldeneye. That's the first one I saw in theater, and I need to give some love to Connery. Either it's gonna probably be either Thunderball or Doctor No. I actually really like Doctor No. And for Roger, The Spy Will Love Me, without question.
Pour moi, c'est Bon Baiser de Russie. Ouais, c'est celui, pour revenir peut-être à ta question tantôt, pourquoi est-ce qu'au service secret de Sa Majesté, c'est plus réaliste? C'est en grande partie une des raisons pourquoi j'aime Bon Baiser de Russie. Ça fait partie des films James Bond les plus réalistes. J'aime l'intrigue. J'aime le fait que c'est une histoire de revanche, mais du côté des méchants. Dans les 15 premières minutes du film, c'est ben, nous les méchants, comment on va faire pour tuer James Bond? On ne voit pas souvent ça, donc ça donne un spin assez intéressant à l'intrigue. Donc voilà.
Plaisir.
Oh. Questions, questions, preguntas?
Yeah.
On a parlé des films préférés. Lequel est votre James Bond préféré?
Oh non. Faut que j'aille, guys.
I know, tough choice.
Oh, what's your least favorite? What's your least favorite?
No, it's your favorite actor. J'ai-tu compris?
Ah, excuse-moi, j'avais mal compris. Okay. Ah, ok, acteur préféré. Ooh.
Lequel des acteurs a fait James Bond a fait la meilleure interprétation du rôle?
Can I go first? Pour moi, I'll do it both English and French.
No, what's your best?
It's Timothy Dalton. We did a presentation. Who was there? Was anyone there for a presentation last year by any chance? Good. Good for you. Thank you for coming back. Timothy Dalton, as we demonstrated in our presentation last year, he's the closest one to Fleming. Donc Dalton, lui, c'est celui qui avait l'interprétation la plus près de Fleming. Parce que Fleming, le Bond de Fleming n'est pas aussi humoristique. Il lance pas des one-liners à tout bout de champ. Il est un petit peu plus intense, un peu plus brutal.
Puis c'est ce que j'apprécie de sa performance en tant que James Bond. Il n'en a pas fait beaucoup, mais j'aime les deux films qu'il a fait. C'est pas les meilleurs, mais j'aime son interprétation. Edgar, I know what you're going to say.
Well, I love one-liners. I can't get enough of one-liners. So my favorite is Sir Roger Moore. Obviously, I can't go against our Fleming scale from last year. So I have to say, c'était, il y avait une sous-question, lequel des acteurs se rapproche le plus du personnage de Fleming, en quelque sorte. Ben, on était d'accord l'année dernière que c'était Timothy Dalton. Mais when it comes to the movies, I can't help myself. Like, it just, I see myself in Rush. Like, just, why are we taking things, why so serious? Like, let's just have a little bit of fun with it, you know? So, I like Roger Moore the most. But yes, Timothy Dalton is the closest to Fleming, yes.
Okay, well, just like a good sports team, I like to root for the winning, the current guy right now. So, I always... I liked Brosnan, and now it's Craig, so I'll be on the Craig bandwagon right now. Obviously, Casino Royale really shot the series into the popularity it's in from 2006 to now, because you never know. Like, maybe it'll. Hopefully, he can pass the torch on at the end of Bond 25, and we'll get the next guy that I'll root for as well. Sean, we know what you're going to say. Barry Nelson. No?
No. No, moi, c'est Roger Moore. Mon premier film que j'ai vu, c'était The Spy Love Me. Donc, c'est ma génération. Puis en plus, oui, c'est pas l'acteur qui était le plus près de Fleming. Au contraire, mais j'aimais tellement son humour. Je sais pas comment l'expliquer, c'est comme ça. Puis en plus, quand tu le rencontres, je l'ai rencontré, c'est encore plus convaincant. Il y a tellement d'humour.
Let's get 5 minutes.
Give us a hard one, come on.
What's going to happen in Bond 25? Nobody knows.
Okay, it's about Bond 25.
What's up?
After Daniel Craig, his last appearance as James Bond, who would you think would be a good actor to replace him for Bond 26 and so on?
That's a tough one. Because there are a lot of good actors working today. For a few years, although I have my eye on someone else all of a sudden, but for a few years, I've been saying Dan Stevens, who I saw in a movie called The Guest, although he's mostly known for Downton Abbey, if I'm not mistaken. And but I discovered him in a film called The Guest, where he plays, he's definitely not, he's a psychopath in that movie. He's sort of the Michael Myers of that film, but he inserts himself into this small family somewhere in the southern United States, and he's very charming, very affable, he's a good-looking guy, but when you peef him off, he moves like a panther, kind of like Sean Connery. So I've always liked Dan Stevens. Although the guy, I watched The Bodyguard. Who's the star of The Bodyguard?
Richard Madden.
Yeah, yeah. I was told, oh, you got to watch this movie. It's right up your alley, Edgar. And I did, and I loved it. And I was like, wow, that guy could be James Bond, actually. So those would, of those two, I don't know, but those are the two at the top of my list anyways.
Who's the Man from U.N.C.L.E. guy and the Superman and
Henry Cavill.
He'd be pretty good, but obviously he's got all that attached to him right now, so it'd be tough. Do you guys want a bit of a potential maybe spoiler for Bond 25? We're not sure, we don't know the official answer, but there could be a female 007, not necessarily James Bond. She may have the number 007, so we may be like looking for this male actor. Who knows where the series is going? We may have a female 007 possible. So
honestly, I have I have ideas, but I'd rather be surprised. I'd rather have them show up with somebody I've never heard before, and it's a great new cast idea. Who forgot to turn off their phones?
Me.
Nobody does it better.
Nobody does it better.
All right. Yeah. So I have no preferences. I'll, you know what? I'll say Dan Stevens.
Oh, thank you.
Is there anybody that knows the name of the actor who does the new series Hawaii 5-0? No. I think that's the guy. Australian, good shape, lots of humor, very good to fight and everything. I saw him. Nobody talks about him, but could be a good James Bond.
He's age appropriate, so maybe.
I think that's going to be a wrap. I think we're done.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for your time.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you. Merci.
And please, if you want to take a quick photo with your phone, if you want to follow our accounts, we're posting tons of unique Bond content, not just regurgitating Eon production photos.
We have people everywhere.
Yeah. So if you follow the Instagram accounts, Facebook pages, Twitters, etc., that'd be amazing. And send us a DM, guys. We'll love to chat Bond with you guys. Come see us up here if you want to hang out.